The show is live and local. I'm Kevin Kelly. We're your connection to local performances. And our conversations today will all have to do with performances being given throughout our area on Saturday night, including something called Listen to the River, which features the woodwind quintet of the Fifth House Ensemble from Chicago, in a performance that integrates live music with stories, photographic images, and commentary on the past, present, and future of the Illinois River. That's at Sangamon Auditorium Saturday night in Springfield. Also, I'll be talking with the artistic director of Rhythmic Circus, which is a Minneapolis-based music and tap dance group, who are going to be performing in Decatur on Saturday night at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center. And finally, I'll be talking with Alon Goldstein, who is piano soloist, will be piano soloist with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra at the Krannert Center in Urbana also Saturday night. He comes to us from Israel. That's our show to come. Stay tuned. That was music from a CD called Black Violet, Act One, The Leagues of Despair, featuring the Fifth House Ensemble, which is a Chicago-based chamber music group, And that particular tune was by Heitor Villa-Lobos from his Bacchianas Brasileiras No. 6, the opening aria, or choros, as he called it. And it featured prominently the flutist of the ensemble, whose name is Melissa Snoza. She and the rest of their wind quintet will be coming to Sangamon Auditorium at Springfield on Saturday, tomorrow night, in a program called Listen to the River, which is a multimedia performance involving, well, various elements, obviously music and stories and photography and commentary having to do with the past, present, and future of the Illinois River. Melissa Snows is my guest here on Live and Local. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I guess I'll ask first, what is the Fifth House Ensemble and where does that name come from?
Sure. Well, we are a large mixed instrumentation chamber music group based in Chicago. So we have more than your average string quartet in terms of number of players. We actually have a woodwind quintet, which is what you'll see at University of Illinois at Springfield, plus a violin, viola, cello, bass, and piano. So we're 10 members all together. And the name actually comes from astrology, believe it or not. In astrology, the fifth house is the house of creativity and pleasure and the arts. And we wanted a name that would encompass the fact that we are more than just a chamber music group. We actually like to tie in other art forms or other things that we enjoy to our performances to really make some connections between the music that we're playing and a ton of other things that our audience might be interested in. So we needed a name that would be a bit inclusive.
Well, you use two terms regarding what you do specially, both narrative chamber music and connective programming. And I guess I'm especially interested in that latter term because I assume that there are slightly different ways of saying somewhat the same thing, or maybe not.
Yeah, I think that narrative chamber music is a way of doing connective programming. And you know what's great about those terms is that we made them both up, so I get to define them however I want. the connective programming concept really came from the fact that we wanted to bring chamber music to a wide variety of different venues, both places that you would expect and places that you might never expect to see chamber music. And so what that requires of us is to come up with a way to connect what it is that we do with the venue and the audience that we are performing for. So as an example of that, we had a project at the Shedd Aquarium a few years ago, and we knew that the baby beluga whale was going to be open to the public for the first time sometime that spring. And so what we did was, instead of just thinking, okay, well, let's bring a woodwind quintet in and play in front of fish, we actually created a full program that was designed around some of the exhibits that were happening at the Shedd at that time. And then we also worked with the education department to come up with activities that would really focus on the specific things that we were exploring with that program, whether it was creating rain or refraction and reflection, so that, you know, kids who were attending that performance had something to do and also could see the connection between what we were playing and where we were. So it's really just all about creating a common space between what we do and wherever we happen to be.
So for a program of the sort you just described, what kind of music would you come up with for that?
So for that program, it was great that we had in our arsenal George Crumb's The Voice of the Whale, in which he really comes up with ways of making the instrument sound like whale song or like seagulls or, you know, gases escaping the bottom of the ocean. So you really get this evocative sound world. And, you know, the kids who were working with us came up with a whole skit, you know, around this piece that they performed while we were doing it. And so you have the more literal connections like that, and then you'll have something a little bit more figurative. Like, I think we chose a Ravel piano trio, which to us sounded a lot like raindrops at the very beginning. And, you know, the kids were doing a rain exercise at that. So it could be something where you're listening to the piece and you hear something in the music that reminds you of a subject that you are exploring, or it could be that the piece itself is written for that purpose. Either one can work.
Well, you really did answer that one question I was gonna ask, which is how much of what you do is newer music that is deliberately descriptive in the way that the George Crumb piece is, or even deliberately representative of something that could be fairly contemporary, as opposed to something like the Ravel, which he may have had no idea about raindrops, but it just reminds you guys of it. So you have a nice mix of repertoire from the old and the new, however it seems to be appropriate for a particular topic.
Absolutely. And that's a lot of what we do in our program process, is to find ways to connect existing established repertoire with repertoire that was just written yesterday. And one of the best ways to do that is through this connected programming process, because there's so many things that you could do to connect these things together. And also the narrative chamber music that you asked about earlier, you know, if we think about narrative as being the kind of storyline that you would see on TV or in the movies, we're used to seeing this sort of parallel storylines that might happen, you know, in a plot where you switch from scene to scene and you can get really different kinds of sounds in that soundtrack happening, but it makes sense because of what's going on in the story. And the same thing is true if you're programming a concert in that way. We did a show recently where we were telling the story of Cinderella and the Devil, so smashing together two classic Grimm fairy tales. And we were able to put Beethoven and Elliot Carter on that same program only because it made perfect sense for the Beethoven to accompany Cinderella. You know, she was getting ready for the ball, and then the Carter is perfect music for the Devil who married three sisters, chopping women up and throwing them in a closet. So, you know, the storyline really helps you to make these connections real.
I wonder how Elliot Carter would have felt about that.
Who knows?
You didn't ask him, I'm guessing.
I didn't ask, but I will say that there were a lot of people in the audience who came up after the show and said, you know, if you had played that piece for me without any context, I probably would have hated it. But it was perfect in the way that it was done. So, you know, it's a way of introducing audience members to something we might not otherwise experience and helping them to see what we see when we're rehearsing something like that. You know, we have to constantly be thinking about character and action and what our intent is in a particular phrase so that the whole group plays that piece in the same way. And so for us to have the opportunity to share that with our audience in real time is really special.
So let's talk about this particular program you'll be doing in Springfield tomorrow night called Listen to the River. It's going to be, as you said, the Woodwind Quintet from Fifth House Ensemble, and along with stories, photographic images, commentary, and I'm reading from their description now, of the past, present, and future of the Illinois River, described as one of Illinois' most important waterways. And they've got some folks from University of Illinois Springfield Biology and Environmental Studies departments, and I notice at least one photographer and videographer. Talk about this particular program. Where did the idea come from, and how does it come together?
Yeah, you know, we were looking at a project with the Biology and Environmental Sciences Department, or Environmental Studies Department, and we have a program that we do in public schools all the time, which involves, you know, teaching kids over a period of time how to listen to music, and then their final presentations are a pairing of some type of research along with music that they have determined to go along with that. So I think as we were having our initial conversations about what kind of project we might do together, we looked a little bit at our process of doing that parallel sort of work in public schools and wanted to bring it more into a university setting. So in this case, you'll get some examples, as we were talking about earlier, about really literal connections between music that is evocative of nature and running water and, you know, and the sorts of things that we will be hearing in the presentations, and also some music that simply has the right kind of energy for that. And, you know, by that I'm speaking of the piece by Paquito de Rivera, his Aires Tropicales, and then also the Villa-Lobos Quintet, neither of which was written for the purpose of talking about the river at all, but it's great to listen to the pairing because there are some really great sound things that happen that really go well with the presentations.
You said you were looking to do a program with on this topic. Were you actually seeking them, or did they seek you, meaning the folks in the Biology Environmental Studies Department at UIS?
You know, I think that we reached out to one another. I know that there were a series of conversations happening around, you know, ways to get us to the university and what the right project might be. And I know that we centered around this idea of doing something with the Biology and Environmental Studies Department and, you know, doing something that would be collaborative because, you know, there are a lot of reasons that a university might bring an ensemble in. And I think one of the things that makes us a bit unique is that we're experienced at and really excited about making these types of connections with departments that are different from just the music department or the performing arts department.
Will this be the first time doing this exact program tomorrow night?
Yes, Actually, absolutely. It was designed specifically for University of Illinois Springfield, and this is actually our first time here.
And do you expect it's a show you can take on the road?
Yeah, you know, actually the process of doing this is definitely something that we can do on tour. I would anticipate that every place that we visit will have their own work to showcase. So, you know, what you get if you adopt a sort of flexible touring model where you have music that you can choose from and you're able to work collaboratively with that department is that each show is really reflective of what makes that particular university or venue special and unique and what they're interested in and what their audiences are interested in.
So while you have programs such as you might find going to, one might find going to your website for Fifth House, where you have several different narrative type programs, which I gather you can do in various places, you'll also have programs like this one where they're one-offs, and it'll probably never happen exactly this way anywhere else, like
right.
Listen to the River.
Absolutely. We do have a touring menu of programs that, you know, programs in a box, if you will, where, you know, it's going to be pretty similar everywhere that we go. But at the same time, this might be a one-off, but the repertoire within it is repertoire that we perform many, many times. It's just that the combination of what we put it with and the order that we perform it is going to be different and special for every venue that we choose.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful concept for both the ensemble and for the various types of programs that community members can hear Saturday at Sangamon Auditorium, hear and see, quite literally, Saturday at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield, and that other folks can see in other communities as you travel around. Melissa Snoza is a flutist with the Fifth House Ensemble from Chicago, and her wind quintet from that group will be participating in this program called Listen to the River tomorrow night. It's delightful to talk to you, and I'm really glad to hear about the ensemble.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
And here is the final movement from one of the pieces she mentioned that they'll be playing in connection with this, well, in as part of Listen to the River. It's by Paquito de Rivera, called Aires Tropicales, which means simply tropical airs or tropical tunes. And it's the final movement called Son, which is a particular kind of South American music. It's the wind quintet from Fifth House Ensemble here on Live and Local. music by Paquito de Rivera, a portion of the final movement of his Tropical Airs, Son, the name of that movement. Members of the Fifth House Ensemble from a live performance they gave at WFMT in Chicago. Stay tuned next for my conversation with Ricky Milan, Artistic Director of Rhythmic Circus, who will be performing tap dance with music at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center at Millikan University in Decatur tomorrow night at 7:30. And coming up still, I'll be talking with pianist Alon Goldstein, who will be performing with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony in Urbana at the Krannert Center also tomorrow night. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. We have support for our show today from 40 North, 88 West, presenting the 10th annual Boneyard Arts Festival, April 19th through the 22nd, with venues throughout the county, the festival, in conjunction with the local business community, is a celebration of music, dance, arts, culture, and theater. Information on this year's festival is at 40north.org. Illinois Public Media's Radio Fund Drive starts next week, and we want to keep that drive short and our member support strong. For every $25,000 we raise by the end of today, we'll deduct a full day from the drive. We're very close to dropping one day from the drive. We've raised over $21,500 in member support, so just a few more will let us drop one of those drive days. That's not entirely the point, of course. We want to make sure we have the money we need to bring you next year's programs. If you haven't done your part yet, make your contribution online now at willpledge.org.
Feet, don't fail me now. Feet, don't fail me now. I said feet, don't fail me now. Feet, don't fail me now. I said feet. I said feet, don't fail me now. Feet, don't fail me now. I said feet, don't fail me now. Feet, don't fail me now. I said feet.
Make this a little matter of fact, because a matter of fact, now this is that, and this is tap, and that's where it's at, and the app appears in the atmosphere. Feel free to feel free, because that's why we're here, for the sake of you, the sake of sound. We're gonna decorate time, baby, break it down, because your feet, my feet, and their feet too, got a story to tell, and it starts in the shoe. So
feet, don't fail.
That was called, as you could probably guess from the words, Feet Don't Fail Me Now, and it featured the musicians and dancers of Rhythmic Circus, a Minneapolis-based company who have won their share of awards, had lots of appearances on TV, and will soon be opening off-Broadway. At least that is the plan. More to the point, they are coming to the Kirkland Fine Arts Center at Millikan University in Decatur for a concert tomorrow night at 7:30. Their artistic director and one of their five dancers is Ricky Milan. He's my guest on this portion of Live and Local. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Just five dancers. It seems
that's correct.
I would have expected more.
Actually, four dancers. One of them is a swing. So in the show, there's only four dancers.
And swing means?
Well, in case somebody gets hurt or something, we got, you know, another one at home waiting to jump on stage, you know.
That never happens, though, does it?
We've had one injury, and it wasn't that severe, so, yeah.
I would assume, but maybe I'm wrong, that injuries among tap dancers are not as frequent as injuries among, say, ballet or modern dancers, or is that a bigger problem than I would guess?
No, I would say that's correct. I'd say your thinking is correct in that. You know, as we would say, we're probably just a lot tougher. So.
And I can't quite tell from a couple of the names, but it looks like you're primarily a male troupe, both among the instrumentalists and the dancers.
Yeah, we got 11 people on stage. One is a female, the rest of us are guys.
How does she sneak in there?
That's very interesting. We get that question all the time. She just happened to be our friend, part of the dance community up there. We're all from Minneapolis. She was just a friend. She was part of the community, and we would jam together and hang out and whatever. She happened to be a dancer, and we didn't cast the group or have any sort of like larger plan or see what we were doing now when we started it. So we just put it together with the people we knew and people we hung out with, and she happened to be in our group of friends.
Well, elaborate a little bit on that start. You say you referred to jamming, which I usually think of as a musical term. Does that also happen among dancers?
Yeah, the interesting and awesome part about tap dance is that, I mean, in my opinion, is that it's an instrument as well as a dance form. So it's a movement form and an audio form. You're making music while you're dancing to it at the same time. And that's kind of my love for it starts with that. And so, yeah, you absolutely have tap jams. I mean, you think about Gregory Hines, you think about the movie Tap, think about all those old hoopers. You know, they would just get together with a couple musicians and just jam. That was kind of how they put on the show.
So when you guys got started, it was just a community of dancers and musicians who occasionally got together to do this sort of thing and then decided, hey, let's put on a show? Or what was the whole start?
Yeah, I think we had worked on different projects together, especially as dancers. And we were friends with musicians. I lived in the same apartment building as half the musicians. And we were all friends, and we were all doing our thing and kind of following our 20s bliss, you know, young 20s bliss, doing whatever we wanted, being free. And as that kind of bliss phase of our life, you know, that young 20s, as we started wanting to do something more legit, more serious, Nick, the executive director of the project, he said, you know, I can handle making a business plan, making this thing actually work, finding gigs, if you guys can start creating a show. And so me and Alex, the singer and guitar player, and he's an amazing singer and songwriter, and he has a lot of amazing music. But me and him just started coming up with some ideas for just some musical pieces. And then once we had the musical pieces, we started putting some choreography to it. And then once we had a couple big pieces, then we created different pieces. And then we had all these pieces, and we started, you know, weaving together into a show and creating monologues and comedy bits. And so the whole night has a flow to it, and it's people seem to be responding. It's been really fun.
So the show is called, the same as the song we opened with, Feet Don't Fail Me Now.
Feet Don't Fail Me Now, that's the name.
Yeah, you got to have the right, I'm sorry, I didn't do the right beat in saying
yeah.
The name.
Emphasis, Feet Don't Fail Me Now.
Yeah, and I've actually got rhythm, so I'll just be sure to do that with any future reference here. Every place you go, is that the show you're doing currently, or are you developing other shows, expanding that show as you go?
That's our baby right now. It's all or nothing with that. We've put about 2 years into it, pretty consistently full time, and especially this past year, we've really just started focusing on it. In this past 6 months, as we're on this off Broadway push, it's become like everything in our lives. We've quit our jobs. We've kind of put everything else we're trying to work on in our lives to the side. And we're saying, what if we all come together? What if we really put our focus together, challenge ourselves to create? Because none of us have a background in or have maybe even ever had an intention of creating a show on this level, on an off-Broadway level. But, you know, with our talents, we've found ourselves in this opportunity and people in a want for it, a demand for it. So we're like, let's put it together. Let's make it as good as it can be. Let's challenge ourselves to be great. And kind of that's the drive behind it. You know, let's take that chance. Let's go on a limb here and be the best we could be. Feet don't fail me now.
The way I phrased it, I think, and certainly the way you phrase it in the biography that is on your website, it says Rhythmic Circus has plans to open off-Broadway. Are those still hopeful plans, or are those definite plans?
Those are definite plans. Since we started, we have... always reached a little beyond what anyone else would have seen it as possible. And so with the off-Broadway project, we were like touring. We had done a lot of performing arts centers. What's the next level? Where can we reach? Where can we take this while we do this? Because we kind of want to we want to burn fast and hot. You got to keep reaching further, faster to get there. And we want to reach as much people with this show, with our energy, with our music. So we said, where do we go? Off-Broadway. That's the big step. That's where you want to be. So Nick, and how Nick does, the executive director, he said, I'm going to find a way to get this show off-Broadway. So he went out to conferences. He educated himself, reads books, and him with our agent out in New York, Robin, they put together the whole business plan, and they go and get the lawyers on board, and they put the whole thing together. So we're currently gaining investors, and it's looking really promising. We're not fully, the term is capitalized for the project, but it's looking really good. It's really exciting.
But you've booked a theater, or you're not quite to that stage yet?
We're in conversations with the theaters. So once you get all the investors on board, then you do that. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's really exciting.
I would imagine. Especially if that wasn't what you all set out to do in the first place.
Right. I mean, there was the initial goal was to inspire people, was to create music that was come from a pure place, you know, do something that was inspiring, artistic, energized, something exciting for us. And in doing so, we created something that was all those things for other people, and those people told other people. So the word just been spreading, and it's like we had... You know, we had no intention of making it to this level, but as soon as you feel that energy, and as soon as people start, talking about it, they want more of it. You're like, well, I can offer that, and so it really energizes you because you see yourself doing something good, and that makes you want to do something more good with your life. You know,
you use the term coming from a pure place. What does that mean?
Pure place, something that's
pure, P-U-R-E or P-E-E-R.
Yeah, pure. Yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
I think that's pretty self-explanatory, something that's real.
Right. Well, I heard something slightly different. Well, and the variety of music, I mean, I've just got a couple of tunes to share with people here, but I gather you'll have quite a variety of tunes to which you dance. What is the musical range for Rhythmic Circus?
The musical range is about as broad as our imaginations can go. We started off, like I said, when me and Alex started the initial creative process, I knew I wanted something Latin because I love dancing to Latin music. And so we created it was based on our keyboard player, came up with a little riff that had a Latin feel to it. And then we put a little Latin drums behind there. We have that piece. And that's become a huge piece. One of a lot of people's favorite parts of the show is the whole entire Latin thing. It's about 7 minutes. And it just grows and builds with insane rhythms, as that kind of music inspires just so many patterns, so many different approaches to rhythm. And then we have one of our other first pieces, which is a really popular one, called I Believe. It's like an R&B kind of jazzy piece that's it's called I Believe, so there's almost a gospel feel to it. And that's another one. And then we go all the way to doing stuff with like a cappella singing. We're from Minnesota, okay? So you get some Minnesota vocalist guys singing a cappella music. It sounds kind of like an a cappella group, but the song or the piece was inspired by a performance I saw by Lady Smith Black Mumbaza, which is an African singing group. So it's kind of like it's become a really unique piece in one of our other staples. That one's called Boogie Monster. And then we have marching band music. We have some just kind of like the Feet Don't Fail Me Now song, which is, I call it, some jump blues or some high energy kind of, I don't know what you call that, pop. So we go all over the place. We play some up-tempo funk. We get all over the place, and we do it pretty quickly and keep it entertaining. That's our goal.
Well, it sounds like, especially if you're interjecting little comedy and other sorts of bits in there as well.
And it ought to
be a great show. Ricky Milan is artistic director for Rhythmic Circus out of Minneapolis. They're going to be at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur Saturday night, tomorrow night at 7:30 on the Millikan University campus. And the show is called Feet Don't Fail Me. Feet Don't Fail Me Now. How's that?
Yeah,
is that a little bit better?
Yeah.
And since you mentioned it, let's go out with some of this tune called Boogie Monster. Tune, meaning you've got the instrumentalists, and then you have the feet of the dancers of Rhythmic Circus. Thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Thank you.
There was a boogie monster dancing in the back of my head. Only when I gave him music would he go to bed. So I worked every day just to keep him fed. But the boogie fell into my feet instead. There was a boogie monster dancing in the back of my head. Only when I gave him music would he go to bed. So I worked every day just to keep him fed. But the boogie fell into my feet.
Satisfy that rhythmic appetite. Groove your feet. beat tonight and satisfy that rhythmic appetite. I said, so, let me say, there's a monster in all the music we play. So keep listening, hear how we do, and let that monster do his voodoo. You know the monster lives in all of us, and sometimes at night it's calling us. And when the monster calls, no doubt we're gonna let that boogie monster out. I say, yeah.
Don't you wanna, 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 la la, 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 la. There was a boogie monster dancing in the back of my head. Only when I gave him music would he go to bed. So I worked every day just to keep him fed. But that boogie fell into my feet.
That's called Boogie Monster, performed by Rhythmic Circus, based in Minneapolis. And my guest was the artistic director and one of the dancers, Ricky Milan. They're going to be performing that as part of their Feet Don't Fail Me Now show that will be at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center at Millikan University in Decatur tomorrow night at 7:30. Stay tuned next for my conversation with the piano soloist with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony, who will be playing at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Also, Saturday night. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309.
Thank you.
That was the opening movement of Le Tombeau de Couperin by Maurice Ravel in the piano original. I say that because it's probably more often heard in the orchestral version, at least on this station. But that was a live performance given at the Phillips Collection in Washington, D.C. in February of 2000 by my next guest here on Live and Local, Alon Goldstein, who is an Israeli pianist coming to Champaign-Urbana tomorrow night. Well, as a matter of fact, he's sitting here right now in our studio. He's going to be performing with the at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Stephen Larson. The program is actually Steve's swan song, final year as the music director. And Alona, I understand that you and Steve have a bit of a long history together, or certainly an interesting history together.
Yes, we collaborated for the first time, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, performing all 5 Beethoven concerti in 1 week with Steve's other orchestra, the Rockford Symphony. And it was done over 3 concerts, and it was an incredible sense of journey coming together with the orchestra and Steve and the team, you know, behind the stage, and of course the whole community through a chronological order of the concerti.
But not just playing the concertos, doing lots of other associated things about his life and illnesses and whatnot.
Well, the whole team, I guess, behind the stage were very imaginative, and together we came up with a whole series of slides that we will share with the audience. And before every concerto, Steve and I were engaged in a 3-4 minute conversation with a few points that we wanted to come across, whether it is about his life or about his music. And then during the same week, you know, the theater in town was showing the Immortal Beloved film. And then in the morning or in the afternoon, there would be some symposium or some kind of a lecture that related to either, you know, it would be Beethoven's What Causes of His Deafness, and all sorts of things like that. So it was kind of a multi cultural, if you wish, or something that is just so much more than just going to a concert, but just something that you can, the whole event, the whole kind of town became the journey of Beethoven for that week. And then about three years after that, we collaborated on a similar thing with the Schumann and Brahms Love Triangle.
Well, although there won't be lots of associated events with this particular performance in which you're playing Rachmaninoff on a program that happens to be all Russian with music by Borodin and also Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony, you and Steve will be in conversation before the concert in the Great Hall at 6:30. So I gather you'll explore what kinds of things in talking about Rachmaninoff, or do you even know at this point?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to attend that pre-concert show. I love post-concert shows. Before I actually walk on stage, I like to enter my zone, quote-unquote. And just, so I don't know if people know that yet, but I don't know if I'll be in the pre-concert show.
Well, I thought I read that you were, so maybe you just don't know it yet. But then again,
surprise,
you know,
surprise.
Maybe you won't. Yeah, but you've been interested in expanding the traditional notion of an orchestral concert. I mean, I've learned this really just from talking with you before we actually opened up the microphone here. Not only in the way you just described, but trying to do things a little less conventionally. Is this partly by way of making a niche for yourself, or is this because you have a particular aesthetic notion of what a classical concert should be?
It's more just because, I mean, we live, we eat, we breathe classical music. I mean, it's so much part of our lives. And before I walk on the stage, as I'm sure you feel the same, we've spent so many countless of hours with the score or with trying to experience what behind those black dots on the paper, trying to figure out what is this miracle we call music, whether it's through a reading or through playing for friends or through playing with friends or through listening. So by the time I walk on stage, there is so much that I want to share aside from just pressing those keys for the duration of that piece, whether it's something I read or the letter that Rachmaninoff wrote or the movie that I saw. And, you know, I guess the end result is something which is less conventional, but the point where I start is not trying to be different or less conventional. It's more like, well, no, but there's so much more that I would like to share the time with you than just that 30 minutes allocated for this concerto. I would like to talk to you about what I read. I would like to show you or refer you to the concert I listened to or just what happens with this piece. And of course, about the piece itself, there are so many extraordinary things that you would like to tell and talk. I read once a beautiful poem by Alfred Brendel, the great pianist, a legendary pianist, and he wrote about a pianist that had one finger too many, and very witty. And he said that he found a wonderful use for this extra finger, that when he would play the music and when he wanted to point out something to the audience that he thought that they might miss, you know, this finger will just jump up and kind of point to the audience to, you know, here's something special. So I guess it's more me wanting to share more with the audience, that I'm trying to find other channels, whether it's, you know, a pre-concert talk or slides or reading letters or anything that might enhance, you know, their experience of how addicted I am to this thing we call classical music.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Alfred Brendel, because he was somebody I was thinking of who one can read about and learn that he was a very witty man. He has a good sense of humor and so on. And I actually got to experience it briefly years ago when I worked for the Ravinia Festival, where I actually picked up the phone when Alfred Brendel called, and he appeared to be a rather funny guy just in the duration of that short phone conversation. But if you go to hear a concert with Brendel, you probably would pick up some of the wit in the way he plays the music if you listen carefully. But otherwise, you guys get out there, you typically say nothing, you come out, you bow, you smile probably, maybe. you play your thing, and the audience gets an idea of your personality as expressed through the music. And whatever you have read about the music will inform your performance, but again, only in a way that not everybody will pick up. So I would think that it would be a lot of fun and would feel like you're sharing more of yourself when you are able to actually say some things about the rest of this show, the rest of your personality that does make up Alon Goldstein, the pianist.
Yeah, and that's why in many places that I come, I also try to maybe come a day before or stay a day after and kind of reach out to the community, whether it's to go to schools or to go to do some kind of a benefit to the orchestra or play a recital, again, of all sorts of ways, you know, to reach out or to share more with what makes this thing so special to me. Yes, and you're absolutely right. Once I walk on the stage, you know, to play, and tomorrow night is going to be Rachmaninoff Paganini, it's all about Rachmaninoff Paganini. You know, the music is the star of the show, not me. I am indispensable, I'm needed, but, you know, what I'm there is, you know, to serve the music, to serve it, you know, to the audience and to serve the music itself, with everything that I learned that I would like to bring during that performance.
Let me ask a question that might be incredibly obvious. Is the Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini as difficult as it sounds?
No, it's a little more.
Because it really does sound like a piece that is more difficult than the average concerted work somehow.
Well, I guess it like a typical, I guess, Jewish boy, I will answer with a question. In other words, how do you define difficulty? You know, when you play a Mozart phrase and there's really not so many notes, then so many things have to happen between the notes. You know, you feel so naked. So it's a totally different kind of difficulty. There is incredible amount of notes in the Rachmaninoff, first of all, that you have to get there. and which is very difficult, and it takes time to learn. There is an incredible sense of rhythm that you have to be on top of. There is a totally different kind of relationship between piano and orchestra that is presented in a Beethoven or a Mozart concerto that you really have to be aligned, and it's extremely challenging. Earlier this year, I was asked by a conductor whom I like very much, I work with a lot, his name is Yoel Levy, and he asked me to join him for a week with the Haifa Orchestra in Israel to do a masterclass for conductors. So for the whole week, he chose four pieces, and one of the pieces was the Rachmaninoff Paganini, because it is so challenging for the orchestra and conductors to be together with the soloist that he really wanted to use that piece for a week to give masterclasses to the conductors. It was an extraordinary experience, you know, in a way, in a very different kind of challenges that a Mozart or a Beethoven concerto will present. It is extremely effective. You know, funnily, Rachmaninoff wrote in a letter that this piece I wrote for my manager.
For my manager?
Yeah.
Meaning?
He knew it's going to get lots of gigs.
Well, I imagine it must have been a sort of perverse kind of fun at that particular conductor's workshop to watch conductors fall on their faces trying to conduct their way through this piece, because it is rather challenging.
Exactly.
Which I'm sure that Steve Larsson will not do tomorrow, because he's probably conducted this piece many times before, and at least many people in the Champaign-Urbana Symphony will have played it before, but many of them, because there are a lot of students in the orchestra, will never have played it before. So they'll be experiencing it for the first time, and it'll probably have that kind of freshness.
It's always the first time. I think once we walk on stage, I mean, there's always that sense of oneness of the first time. And I think that's one of the challenges that I try to present myself with every piece that I play, that, you know, now I'm giving the world premiere of it. I try to get it as fresh and as a first time experience as I can, you know, with the surprises, when nothing is for granted, and it ends up being the first time.
Well, and there will be no doubt some people, in fact, hearing it that way as well in the concert tomorrow night. Alon Goldstein, piano soloist in Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini, on a program that also includes the Overture to Prince Igor by Alexander Borodin and the wonderful Fifth Symphony of Dmitri Shostakovich. The Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, conducted in his final concert with that orchestra by Steven Larsson, as music director at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts tomorrow night at 7:30 in Urbana. You're listening to 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR and Classical Music for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Support for the station also comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting features a one-woman show by Beverly Mollen with a lineup of Italian wines, followed by live music from 7 to 9 by Ken Smith and friends. I want to go out with a very end of another performance by Alon Goldstein, also from that Phillips Collection recital from 2000 in Washington, D.C. This is the final movement, or part of it, from The Wanderer Fantasy of Franz Schubert. Alon, thanks very much for joining us on the show. It's great to talk to you.
Great pleasure. Thank you.